Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello there, a very good afternoon and welcome to Liveline. It's John Cook with you this Friday afternoon. I hope you're well. It's 51551 for your text. It's 0818 715 815 and liveline at rte.ie to get in touch with us. 087 484 8888 on the WhatsApp as well. And we'd love to hear how you're feeling this Friday. What's made your day? Because one listener's been telling us already, and we'll hear from her later, that a random act of kindness turned a bad situation around for her last evening. I'd love to know if someone has made your day by maybe showing you a little bit of random acts of kindness. 51551 to get in touch with us on those as well. And lots more to come too. Clodagh, good afternoon.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well. And you?
Oh, good. Well, it's a good Friday.
It's a good feeling, isn't it? Are you going out this weekend?
It is. I'm not actually going out this weekend. I'm having a sober weekend.
Okay.
It's nice to have every once in a while.
A sober weekend. And the reason I asked, and if I'm prying into your love life straight away, are you going dating is what I wanted to ask.
Not this weekend. No. But who knows? You never know. You could bump into someone on the street. You never know what'll happen. I'm only 29, so options are open when you're single, John.
Of course. And yes, there's plenty of time, Clodagh. But I know exactly. you are dating with intention, is what I'm told. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I'm 29. I don't believe in a clock. I don't think there's a clock. As you said, I've loads of time. But I think I'm at an age now where there's a little bit more intent behind what I'm looking for and what I'm doing myself in terms of dating. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm dating with intention. I'm dating looking for certain things, and I'm just being more aware of how I show up in the dating scene as well.
Mm-hmm. And when you say you're more aware of how you show up and that you're dating with intention now, you've decided to do things a bit differently to how you had been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think just because I've kind of reached the end of my 20s now and I'm looking towards the future, you know, I've gotten a little bit bored of the same old, let's just go for a drink date. And sober dating is something that I've been kind of dipping into this year, and a lot of my generation are kind of, I suppose, stepping into because of the sober curiosity movement. But I suppose because of that, it allows us to date with more intent or just go into stuff and feel a little bit more authentic and feel a little bit more real with how we're showing up ourselves, but also how the person in front of us is showing up to us as well. So
okay,
it's just kind of a new thing, new age thing, I suppose.
Okay, sober dating. So I want to know all about it and this scene and how it works. Without sounding too old to you, but I am a happily married man as well. I probably don't know much about the dating scene.
Yeah, well, look, the dating scene is rough out there in Ireland for young people at the moment.
Rough.
Yeah, it's not an easy place to be. I feel like it was a lot easier back in the day, and maybe it's just since phones and dating apps and everything, it's just gotten a lot harder. But I think everyone is just trying to meet people more authentically now and doesn't always want it to revolve around the Saturday night drinks in the pub, you know? Mm-hmm.
And sorry, when you say it's rough and then you mention the dating apps, is that yeah. What's difficult, is it? Because, by the way, I'd be lost in a world of dating apps, but
It's just the dating apps, people use them, I feel, for like quick validation. They can get a quick chat off somebody. They can be chatting to 12 people at the same time. You could have a message from them one day. You could wake up the next day and they've removed you as a match from the app. And it's just kind of like, it feels really transactional. You're kind of looking at somebody's pictures and judging them by a picture. It all feels very inauthentic and virtual, so it doesn't feel real. And so I think, yeah, a lot of people my age are honestly so sick of the apps because we're not getting a lot from them. We're really not.
And are you still using them, Clodagh?
No, I actually deleted them in like February, and I've kind of been testing myself to see would I re-download them since, but I haven't. Mm-hmm. So I'm out in the wild, as I call it, and just trying to meet people organically.
There you go.
Which isn't always easy. It's not that easy these days because, would you believe it, people don't really strike up a chat as much anymore, because again, they can get it so easily on an app. They can get that conversation, the quick date, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it's actually much harder to meet someone organically, even if that's what I'm doing. But
and where would you go typically out in the wild, as you put it, dating Clodagh? Does it all usually revolve around trying to meet someone in a bar or something like that?
Well, I suppose even traditionally and growing up in all of my 20s, it would have been kind of going into bars and when I was in college, and that's how you'd bump into somebody. But I suppose since the pandemic, we're all just kind of maybe doing more activities and we all want to get out more. And I suppose for me anyway, I'm very active and I like going running, and you know, I'm not opposed to going to like run clubs and different mornings and workshops and different things like that. And I suppose because I've deleted the dating apps, it actually forces me to go out of my way to go to all these random activities, because I believe I have to keep walking into new rooms and new spaces to meet people outside of alcohol-related settings. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's having that confidence to push yourself and go somewhere different, you know.
Okay. And Clodagh, have you been out sober dating? So you've decided no alcohol here, I'm meeting someone for the first time. What's been the experience?
Well, I suppose I do 50-50. I'm not opposed to a drink or a drinks date, but I suppose everyone's just kind of changing their views a little. But I actually have found the experience to be very refreshing. You know, some people say to me, God, would you not be nervous now going chatting to somebody for the first time and you don't even know them? But I think that's kind of the whole point, is like that first moment where you meet them at the corner or wherever you've agreed, and you're both kind of giggly and you're both laughing it off because it's like, oh God, like mm-hmm. this is a complete stranger. It's just another human. I like to think, you know, there doesn't have to be an outcome out of this. This doesn't have to be my husband. It doesn't have to even go further than this date. And I think when you break it down to we're just two humans having an interaction for an hour or two, it's not as scary as I think we build it up in our heads. Okay. And then I found the chats have been more interesting. There's been a deeper connection. You know, it's just everyone's kind of have their wits more about them. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully,
so
it's just
refreshing.
Somebody nice, I suppose, is a good start. 51551 087 484 8888 if you want to get in touch. Will you stay with us, Clodagh? Because I want to explore this more with you and other listeners as well.
No,
Callie-Anne, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
You go sober dating as well, do you?
I go sober all the time, 100%. But yeah, sober dating for the last nearly 6 years, mm-hmm. I want to say. It's been great.
Good for you. Are you on a sober date right now? There's a bit of noise in the background.
I'm currently I am basically going to, my favourite humans are getting married.
You're at a wedding?
I'm at a wedding right now. The groom has just come over to me now to wave at me. He's pleased to me being sober, so this is nothing new for them. But yeah, no, two of my favourite human beings are getting married right now. I'll be doing the wedding sober. Just like all the, like everything, festivals, dating, everything sober. Mm-hmm. But yeah, dating has been, it's been my thing now for the last 6 years. I don't wake up with the fear. I have no issues. The way I say it, because I say it a lot online to anyone that knows me, they've known me sober more than they have known me with drink. And I just say to them, like, you're authentically you and you're cool enough as you are, and whatever drunk you can do, sober you can do too. And it's just changing that mm-hmm. mindset. And like when I've gone on dates, I'm dating right now and the guy I'm dating has no issues. It's never been a situation for me where it's like, oh, you don't drink, or that Irish shame of like, oh, just have one. As soon as I say to them, oh, I don't drink, they're like, oh, curious about it. Like, when did you do it? Is there a reason? No, I just decided for my own mental health to just give it up and have a little bit more control over my head and a little bit more control over my body. And that's kind of why I did it. That's mm-hmm. why I've started it. And it's been great. It's never impacted in any way.
It's great to hear. Does that groom that's waving over to you know that he's close to getting married on Liveline now?
Fully. Like, literally, Laura and John, congratulations. To be honest, I was sober on a night out with them and I've already married some. That's how they've met, was through me. A sober night out in Coffers. And I knew they liked each other. And I said it to them, I was like, guys, you need to get married. So I initiated a ceremony in Coffers. And yeah, now today I'm supposed to go in and be their MC for the day and do it all over again.
Oh, wow. So congrats to Laura and John, first of all. Enjoy the wedding as well. It sounds like you're a sober matchmaker, Callie-Anne, as well as a sober dater.
Telling you now, if anyone needs any tips and tricks, just message me and let me know. I've got them all. I know how to help anyone out when they're if they're nervous about it, because it is nerve-wracking, because you feel like you might need drinks to be a bit more bubbly or be a little bit more conversational. You don't. You just need to be you and they will expect that and respect it, and that's how I see it. And if they don't, well, then they're out for you.
I'm wondering if many of your friends are sober dating as well. And it's 51551, by the way, if listeners want to get in touch, or 087-484-8888 on WhatsApp. Is it now a thing? Is it something you're doing together, Kellyanne? And I'm also wondering, you mentioned you're on a date with a guy, or you're dating someone right now. You're at a wedding, I think, together. Does it matter if the other person is drinking, if you're the sober person?
Never. No, never, ever, ever, ever. Like, if they want to have a drink and they're out of my company, by all means, go ahead, have it. Like, I'm telling them to. Just because it's my choice to not drink and be sober, doesn't mean that that needs to impact them. But I have found, like, anytime I'm dating someone, because I'm not, they tend to want to dabble in it. They're curious about it because they see it doesn't impact me. I'm still the first up on the dance floor, the last one to leave. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I'm making sure, I'm calling my friends the next morning if we've been all been out together. I'm like the fear cruncher. I'm like, guys, you were fine. You were grand.
You're the
like,
fear cruncher.
I'm like, no.
Sorry, from sober matchmaker to fear cruncher. What's a fear cruncher?
Oh, I'll get the messages in the girls' group. Oh, Kellyanne, was I bad? Was I doing anything? Was I crazy? No, you were great. You're having the best time ever. Don't
what
be
did I say? Who was I dancing with? That kind of thing.
Exactly, exactly. And who knows? Like, they might have matched with someone on a night out like these guys are, which I'm being called in now. The bell has gone, so I must go.
Okay, is it ceremony time, or what stage are you at there now?
It's ceremony time.
Okay.
It's kicking off now. Very exciting.
Here comes the bride. Congratulations, Laura and John. Kellyanne, fair play to you as well. Clodagh, have you gone to a sober wedding, or is that difficult to go through a long day where there's a lot of drink around?
I actually haven't gone to a sober wedding, but I'm feeling very inspired by Kellyanne. I think it sounds like it's just as much fun. I've definitely done sober gigs. I've done sober concerts. I've done sober nights out. You know, that it's never been an issue to me. And again, like that, my friends never question me or say, oh God, you should have a drink. Like, I think our generation is very accepting of everyone's behaviour and what everyone chooses to do these days. So that's lovely as well, because it's a mutual respect, you know.
Okay. Do people still ask you the questions? Why are you not drinking, as Kellyanne mentioned there? What's wrong? Or things like that?
You would still get the question of like, oh, why aren't you drinking tonight? But I think once you give an answer once, that you don't get the pressure back, you know. But I think it's more of a curious thing because, say, for me, I'm not full-time sober. I would choose to be sometimes. So for me, people are just wondering why on that night, you know. But not too much pressure, thank God.
Okay, well, I hope it's becoming more normalised, but I know those questions still are out there.
They definitely exist, yeah.
Yeah, 51551 if listeners have experiences they want to share as well. Ger, good afternoon. And Clodagh, stay with me if you can. Good afternoon, Ger.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
You're listening to our sober matchmakers and our sober daters here as well. Are you going out this weekend?
I am. They do sound younger than I am, so, and I'm certainly not dating. So,
well, you and me both, but I'm interested in your story, Ger. Go ahead.
So I became sober curious a couple of years ago. I gave up alcohol for a year. No bother. Went on holiday with my family, my husband and my kids. And as soon as I got into a hot climate, grabbed a beer and went back on it for, I don't know, a year and a half, whatever. But I just decided in June that I was sick of it, sick of the merry-go-round, sick of drinking, sick of Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and just the habit, the habitual nature of it. And I just said, to hell with it, I'm done. So I'm feeling great, I'm doing great, and I hope I never drink again.
Well, good for you. Sick of the merry-go-round, will you explain that to me?
Oh, just kind of trying to, you know, this limit that we all should keep to every week, and then realizing that I had exceeded it, whatever the 14 units are for women. Mm-hmm. Very easy to do, especially if you're drinking three nights a week. And yeah, just the fact that it's the weekend, let's open a bottle of wine and or let's go out because it's the weekend, or that merry-go-round, that, yeah, just trying to get off it, trying to...
Was it feeling bad after it, Ger, or just feeling tired?
Feeling bad, just having remorse, I suppose, for finishing that bottle of wine instead of sharing that bottle of wine, you know, that way. And just waking up the next morning knowing I hadn't slept as well as I could have. And also just having drink around the house. It's all whatever about drinking when you're going out, but just got into the habit, I suppose, like a lot of people did around COVID, of drinking in the house, and you're sitting watching a movie and you're sharing a bottle of wine and you're just like, is this necessary? Why am I doing this? And then just kind of, yeah, just the habit of it and just not being able to.
Okay, and I know for some people this becomes a problem, but was it something you were just enjoying, Ger, or what changed?
I thought I was enjoying it, but I suppose what changed, I mean, I'm 51, I just sometimes I was going out and drinking more than I wanted to, and maybe sometimes forgetting things, and you know, as you get older, I think the effect of drink changes as well, which a lot of people might not be aware of.
Would your kids ask you about it, Ger?
No, never. And they'd say they'd never seen me drunk, you know, that kind of way. So, but I suppose, like, I have an 18-year-old daughter and then I've three lads coming up, and I just didn't want them to see, like, it's bad enough that nearly every celebration in the country revolves around alcohol, but to have it in your home and that they walk into your sitting room and you're drinking, you know, that, and you're trying, they're coming to an age where they're going to start experimenting with drink, and how can you be a good influence on them if you're drinking every weekend?
What do you think of what Callie-Anne and Clodagh were saying there? They're out on the dating scene, one at a wedding today as well, having a great time without drink. Do you feel that way, Ger?
I think they're brilliant, because, and I think that generation are amazing, because they're not all about drinking. They're all about their fitness, and they're all about, you know, other things that our generation, I don't think, were. Like, we went to a festival there recently, myself and some friends and my daughter, my family and my sister, and myself and my sister weren't drinking because she's sober curious as well. And my daughter didn't drink that weekend because she said we weren't drinking. Whereas if we'd have been drinking, she might have been drinking. She might have decided, I don't want to be the only one not drinking. So that's a very small, the first knock-on benefit that you can see from it. You know?
Okay. 51551, if listeners want to get in touch on this as well, because many of you are. We're talking about sober dating, and Laura's on the line as well. Good afternoon, Laura.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Good. All good. I'm a proud Ballyhadrine woman.
Oh, good to talk to you. How are things?
Good.
Wait. I know your mother.
Yes, you do.
I've worked you out showing my age there as well. You're a
small world.
That is a small world. I come from that part of the country myself originally, via County Clare and all sorts of other places. But you're from Roscommon. Yeah. Tell me your situation, Laura.
Yeah, so I suppose, look, as I turned 18, you know, the usual, tried alcohol. It was never really for me. I never really got the kick out of it. I suppose I'm a very kind of outgoing person, very chatty. And I suppose some people need alcohol to, I suppose, be outgoing. I never really needed that. And I never really got the kick, I suppose, from alcohol. You know, I would have been in a few relationships kind of over them few years, never really worked out. And then I was single for a period of time, and my friends would have kind of kept on to me about going on, you know, dating apps. And I was so against that all over the years, I suppose, the safety aspect. You don't know who you're meeting. You don't know if it's a real profile. So they kept on to me, and I eventually gave in, went on the Tinder and the Bumble and all that, and kind of had a love-hate relationship for it. Went on it for a couple of weeks, went on one or two dates or kind of meetups, you know, then I deleted the app, and then May, June 2021 I kind of got back into it again, met up with a guy, that was June 2021, and you know, we swapped numbers when we met, went from strength to strength, and January of this year we got engaged, and then we're getting married next year.
Oh, congratulations, fair play to you.
Yeah, so it's all worked out, all from a dating app that I would never have looked into, only for friends recommended it.
Okay, well, it's good
me.
To hear that dating apps can still work as well, because things are rough, Clodagh told us out there as well. What's your fiance's name?
Rory Harkin from Donegal.
Okay, good man, Rory. Fair play to you. And got a good Roscommon woman, or I'm not sure if you're a Mayo supporter where you are there as well.
It's controversial, as you know, but the one thing I love to say is I've got him out of Donegal down to Ballyhadrine. So I'm very proud to say that, because it's not often you get a Donegal man out of Donegal.
Well, welcome, Rory. Fair play to you, Laura, as well. Tell us about your wedding plans, or can you reveal anything to me?
Oh, I can. Yeah, look, it's all kind of planned. We got engaged the day after Storm Eowyn in January, and we had no power for 13 days. So we came home from work every evening sitting under candlelight, which I suppose was very romantic back. And we just had loads of time. We had no phone coverage. We were trying to save our batteries on our phone. So we just sat down and got straight into the whole planning. So we're really lucky we're getting married. Our reception's going to be in the new hotel in Westport next year called The Grace. It's opening in spring.
Lovely.
And we just booked the honeymoon the other day. And yeah, it's all going well. We're very excited.
Oh, you're making me nosy now, because I like my, you know, my mother will be asking about your mother. Where are you going on the honeymoon?
We're flying to Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic for an all-inclusive adult-only resort, and now, then we're going on to the west coast of America.
Now, back to the local, away from the local gossip again. Laura, I'm thinking you dated totally off the grid, as well as dating sober as well, with no electricity, probably no broadband, no internet, and I suppose when no drink, and you found someone you could tolerate and you enjoyed their company for several days in the dark. That's love.
Yeah, and I suppose it's important to note as well, like Rory would take an odd drink or two. Like I would never, if someone said to me, I'll give you €500 to go to a nightclub tonight, that's not my scene. Wouldn't really go out to a bar or a nightclub. We're happy to go out for a nice meal. Sometimes Rory will never take a drink. The odd time he might have one, two, you know, max three or four drinks, you know, and I suppose it's important sometimes people think, you know, it has to be both people not drinking, but that's not the case in our situation. Roy will still have a drink or two. You know, I suppose he's quite happy I'm always the driver, but that doesn't bother me either, you know. Sometimes we go away for a night and he mightn't have a drink at all. You know, it just depends. I mean, I'd give me a Coke Zero and I'm more than happy.
Okay. And when you mentioned the wedding, Laura, just because we were hearing there about Callian at a wedding there as well, right now, do you think there's an awful lot of emphasis on alcohol around a wedding, or will yours be any different as a result of this?
I suppose, look, an Irish wedding is an Irish wedding. Like, obviously, there's going to be the bar, there's going to be the drinks. You know, I'll quite happily have a couple of Coke Zeros. Rory, I'm sure, with it being his wedding day, will have a couple of drinks. Mm-hmm. And, like, even some of my friends, you know, that will go out every weekend will be like, oh, it's going to be a mad session. And that's their understanding of a wedding. They go, they book in for the couple of nights. You know, they have their drinks. So I suppose it's each to their own and what you make a wedding or what you make a night away.
Okay, Laura, I'm delighted with your good news and that we've got to share it with one or two people right across the country here on Liveline as well. We're getting lots of people telling us about sober dating. 51551 or 087-484-8888.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818-715-815.
And 51551 for your text. It's John Cook with you until 3, and we are sober dating this weekend to find out a little bit more about a growing trend, it seems. Faye, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you getting on?
I'm very well, Faye, and thanks for talking to us on Liveline as well. Are you and your friends, do you go sober dating? Are you sober curious, or what do you describe it as?
Well, I'm very happily in a relationship, so I'm definitely not sober dating.
Let's get that cleared up straight away, Faye. And I'm sorry if I've caused
Sean,
any trouble.
I promise if you're listening to the radio, there's nothing going on.
Sean, I'm sorry. Faye, keep talking. This is just a platonic conversation, you and me. But what about your friends? Tell me how you socialise.
I kind of became sober curious when I was in final year of college because, like that, I was like, I just can't keep doing going out, getting drunk every night, waking up in my bed with a chipper beside me. I just can't do it. So I set up a group in Galway called Sober Sally's, and the main aim was to just, you know, have a sober event, have something where people could meet new people, because my justification was always, I'll go out, I'll meet a load of new people, I'll have so many friends, but then I'll go out, I'll get twisty-eyed drunk, and then I wouldn't remember meeting anyone. And the people I did meet, I would have the fear walking past them in the street because I'd be like, oh my goodness, what have I done? What have I said? So definitely amongst me and my friends, there's a very good understanding of like, look, I'm not drinking tonight and it's nothing. It's not that I'm on medication. I'm not pregnant. I'm not doing anything. I'm just not drinking tonight.
Were they all the questions you were being asked, Faye, then? Was it you were getting those old chestnuts?
It was insanity. Like, I live in a very active part of Galway. There's a lot of pubs around. So obviously when a friend is like, do you want to meet up? The first call is always the pub. But then you'd get there and like that, I was like, look, I'll just have my waddy. I'll have a fizzy drink. I'll have whatever. But like that, I'd get the whole, why are you not drinking? You're not driving. You're not doing anything early in the morning. It's like, no, I know I'm not. I just don't feel like drinking. So kind of as we've grown and as that understanding has grown, it's turned into, no, this is a thing we do. And it's also kind of encouraged us as well to branch out. So like that, maybe go for a nice meal together, go to the cinema together, go do an escape room. It really helps you branch out as well to stop that kind of constant trend of just drinking all the time.
Mm-hmm. And would you be the type of person then that's still out, you know, dancing at a nightclub with friends of your age? Or we heard of people happy to dance at weddings there as well, having a great time as well. No issue for them doing it sober.
There's no fear of getting me on a dance floor. That DJ knows me by my first and last name. Like, it's, I think the whole thing of once you kind of, I think you kind of need to almost escape your brain and think about it a little bit. So like the whole thing of if you drink and then you dance, then your body wants to dance and you do want to go out dancing. And maybe you do just need a bit of liquid courage to help you get through that. But then mm-hmm. kind of once you think about it, it's like, if I was drinking, I'd be dancing anyway. So why am I letting the fact that I'm having a Coca-Cola instead of a beer stop me from going out and dancing? So yeah, definitely. Like I would have nothing to hold back my inhibitions. If anything, my friends probably wish I would be more inhibited, but that's not the case.
Don't hold back, Faith. How did the group work then when you brought people together that were sober, curious? You obviously felt there was a need or a demand. People wanted to maybe try to socialise a little bit differently.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of, when I first set it up, I was really fearful that it would kind of just be me and like three friends playing Scrabble, being like, look what we're doing. But there was crazy engagement. I think we got 1,000 followers on Instagram in the first week and like getting messages from across the country of people saying they wish it existed in Dublin, they wish it existed in Cork. And then kind of once you're in that space, you start to realize how many there are across the country that maybe just don't get the same airtime. So then it kind of becomes even wider than just the one community, because there's, you know, I know there's sober curious groups, there's groups that are 100% sober, there's groups that come together and try and organise sober spaces for people who maybe do drink regularly. I know, for example, Outhouse, the kind of LGBTQ network community, they would do a lot of queer sober spaces, which I think are really important, especially within that community, because there has kind of been, it is kind of same as any sort of movement that grows. It does kind of start with your cis het community and then it slowly grows into your like more underrepresented communities. So seeing communities coming together from all walks of life to kind of explore this sober curiosity is really refreshing.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned becoming sober curious in college, and Faye, you're a student activist as well. There's a lot of people would assume that the college nights are still very much focused on drink, and maybe I'm being unfair on that because they were a long time ago for me. Are you seeing that change?
Definitely, especially like a lot of my work, I'm working with students' unions across the country, and so many of them now are putting an emphasis on I think in the past what would have happened was like there would have been a sober event ran, but it was like playing cards in the next room or, you know, maybe organizing a movie night that no one really cares to go to, but it's so that you could say you did it. But now they're being given the same amount of attention and they're being given the same amount of emphasis, and it's about giving that alternative to students, because it's an unfortunate truth that a lot of people kind of enter sober curiosity because of like that. They've had the bad experience or they've gone out, gotten the fear, and then they're like, look, I can't do that again. So instead, if you start with both points equally, so that let's say you're a first year in college and you see the students' union has organized, you know, drag bingo going on in the middle of the day, no alcohol involved, and also a Jersey night going on at the pub in town, they're the same. They're given the same opportunity and kind of, you know, scope to be equal events. It's no longer just like, if you're not going to the drink event, you're dry. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you can do whatever you want and they're there for you for a reason.
And it sounds like a lovely group you had, bringing people together who are sober, curious. Did the issue of dating come up? You said it's not for you because you're happy in a relationship. Did it come up? Did any nice romances form out of the group? Or did people say to you, you know, I still feel like a little awkward or a little more nervous dating sober?
I will say when the group was set up, it definitely, I think maybe just because I'm a girl myself, a lot of people viewed it as like a girls group. And that was really important for us to emphasize that like it is a group for everyone. It's a group where, you know, a man and a woman can come along and meet each other. And listen, at the end of the day, I'm just a facilitator. I don't need to know how anyone gets down when they get home. So we have seen some great friendships and groups coming out of the group, definitely.
51551 if you want to get in touch with us, or 087-484-8888. Any romances? You're not sure that yet, Faye?
No, I'll keep out of that part. I don't need to go to any more weddings. I don't need to buy another new hat, so I'm good. If anyone has found love, that's great for you.
We'll give it time. Good for them as well. Thanks, Faye. Ben, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How's it going?
087-484-8888 as well if others want to get in touch. Ben, what do you think? Do you go sober dating?
On my side, it's the fact that I've never drank. So to me, all dating is sober dating,
right?
I guess. So
you don't know the difference, so.
Yeah, I don't know the difference. I mean, I have noticed that when I go on dates with people, if I say that I don't drink, they almost universally would choose not to either. And sometimes you feel like on their side that it's a little bit awkward for them, maybe. But for me, it's more natural, and hopefully that comes across, and they kind of calm down eventually. But that's the perspective I've had my whole life. Okay. Because neither of my parents drank either, and so I kind of just emulated that behavior and just carried on with it, you know. So.
Okay, Ben, we're going to see, can we improve your line? 51551, and Darren, good afternoon to you.
Hi, John. How are you keeping?
I'm very well. And tell me about your sober dating or social life or otherwise.
Yeah, or lack thereof now at the moment.
What's going on, Darren?
But I gave up alcohol. I stopped drinking a year coming up now at the end of October. And to be honest, it was the best decision I've ever made in my life. I've never had a more productive year. But dating, yeah, has definitely suffered a little bit, I think. And I think it's like what Ben is saying, you know, people go on a date and when they find out that you don't drink, they decide not to drink as well. But I think they're, well, in my experience, they're a little bit disappointed kind of with the situation if they do drink. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of, it's their other people's perceptions. That's what I've noticed, that, you know, it's kind of like what they're thinking about you not drinking. They're like, oh, Jesus, is this one an alcoholic? And to be honest, I think, what Irish person isn't an alcoholic? I know, I'm only joking. But, yeah, and I think, and I know that as well because, you know, when I was drinking, I loved wine. And I remember going on a date with a guy and he didn't drink. And it made me feel kind of awkward. Do you know what I mean? That I found it difficult to enjoy the date, but that's completely my own problem. Do you know that kind of way? And now I look back on that now and I feel really bad that I didn't really give him a chance because I was like, oh, sure, it's going to be no crack if he's not drinking. Do you know what I mean?
Can I bring in Ben on that as well? Because we have him there as well. Ben, if you say I'm not drinking because you've never drank and you go on a date, does someone react to you differently there or feel like they have to behave in a certain way?
It depends on the person. They never directly point it out to me. They never say, oh, that's weird. It's odd that you don't drink. But they do get those. There was someone else earlier on the line. You do get those questions like, oh, that's interesting. Why is that? Or the one that I get a lot is, oh, you must save a lot of money, as if it's kind of like it's to do with money. But no, it's
could be true as well, Ben.
It could be. It is an element of it, but it's, you know what I mean? It's not the reason why.
I know.
But no, sometimes they change their behavior, they'd be a bit more awkward or whatever, but I never felt like if we weren't a match or whatever, that it was because of that, of the decision, the life decision that I made. I never really felt that. Mm-hmm. So
good.
There you go, Darren. You're pleased to hear Ben doesn't feel like that. You're still feeling a bit awkward though about how some people behave around you.
Yeah, I think I've kind of stopped, like, when I gave up alcohol in the beginning, I was, like, telling everybody, I was shouting it from the rooftops, and I actually had one experience. I was travelling, I went away for a couple of months, and I met this gorgeous guy in Colombia, he was from New Zealand, and we got on so well, we were having great crack, and next thing he was like, do you want a drink? And I was like, oh no, I don't actually drink. And his whole, like, demeanor changed, and it ended up like he didn't want basically anything got to do with me once I told him that. So from that experience, I actually decided I'm not going to. And other experiences when I was telling everybody, oh yeah, I'm not drinking at the moment, it was like everybody would turn and look at you and be like, oh my God, why are you not drinking? Like what Ben's saying, you know, are you on antibiotics? All the different questions. Mm-hmm. And that kind of becomes the conversation. Do you know what I mean? When it's like, you know, just because I'm not drinking, it's not my whole personality. So what I've decided to do is just not tell anybody that I don't drink. Well, I say that now. I actually am creating content online, and I've just recently told the entire world.
You've just told the whole country here on Liveline, Jerry.
Exactly, yeah.
But
I've
thank
told
you very
everybody
much.
That I don't drink.
Thank you very much for doing that. Faye, what do you think about Ben and Darren's experience there or other people's perceptions? Because to actually kind of almost have to hide that you're not drinking as well or worried about how someone else will react, what do you say? Because maybe you've encountered that in your group.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is kind of because it's become such a societal thing of drinking, and I don't want to be like, society is wrong, but I think because it's become such a societal thing of drinking and it's an expectation almost, then when you do turn and say, I'm not drinking, it almost is like a clutching pearls reaction. It's like, what do you mean you're not drinking? It's like you're telling someone you're not going to mass on Sunday. It's just people have it's become such an expectation now that when you do choose to opt out, people get very surprised. I remember even Fido in school, there was a girl who was underage, so shouldn't have been drinking anyway, but wasn't drinking because her parents are pioneers. And it was like, her parents are pioneers, she can't. It was just such a strange, mm-hmm. the way we treat people who don't drink. And whether it's a permanent choice or whether it's a temporary choice, people just have such adverse reactions. Like, mm-hmm. even taking myself, for example, like that, there might be a night where I drink and there might be a night where I go crazy and I do wake up next to my takeaway in bed and that's fine. And there might be a night where I just have water or a fizzy drink or whatever it is. And it's like people couldn't wrap their head around that you don't have to be on one end of the spectrum or the other. You can, you know, kind of flow and ebb as to how you treat alcohol. I think that's something that definitely needs, mm-hmm. people need to come over a little bit.
It's good to hear. Ben, was there drinking in your family? Because I think you said just you never drank, or was who were you inspired by there?
Neither of my parents drank either, and my one sibling, my older brother, he only drinks very occasionally, and perhaps now maybe not at all. And so, yeah, it was kind of a part of it was a kind of like monkey see, monkey do. I just copied what my parents were doing, and my father gave his perspective on it, and he said that, you know, if you don't control it properly, you know, it has negative consequences. It's not good for your health, all this kind of stuff. And at the time, I kind of just bought it. I know there were social consequences. Obviously, you're on a different energy level than people around you, and therefore people might look at you a bit strangely. But I found that when I was out with a group of people who were drinking, I would almost pick up the energy from them and sort of like kind of ride the wave, so to speak. And so I would still have a really good time, but I just might not be laughing as much at that and the various things. But that's what I felt throughout my whole life. And I've never had any huge difficulties with the decision. So, yeah.
Good for you. And I'm thinking about those friends when they were asking you as well, were you saving money? I regularly would enjoy a non-alcoholic beer if I'm driving home or I'm the designated driver. And when you look at the price of them as well, Ben, I'd say you're spending just as much sometimes, are you?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm normally just very simple. I'm just drinking water or something. But if I want to be part of the, you know, when people are, you know, proposing a toast or something and you want to have a drink in your hand that's not water, you know, you can sometimes go for those options. Yeah, definitely.
Darren, are you feeling a bit better about going sober dating now? Or maybe there's more people out there that are open to the idea, I think.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking you can give Ben my number there if he wants to hit me up.
We'll have to ask Ben that. She can stay on the line afterwards if you want to arrange something. You're with the dating line with John Cook until 3 o'clock.
Exactly, John. Sober dating online. There could be a gap in the market for this.
There you go. I found my niche. Darren, thank you so much. I wish you well, and Ben as well. I wish you well together if you stay on the line to take each other's numbers. I leave that up to yourselves and our Liveline production team as well. And thanks to Faye and to Clodagh and to Callie-Anne and Jer and everyone who talked to us about social dating. Keep the calls and comments coming at 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And 51551 or liveline at rte.ie if you want to get in touch as well. I think that's number swapped. I think if I have the tally correct, we've had two weddings there and one first date set up as well. Anything could happen on Liveline, so do get in touch. 087 484 8888. Many of you got in touch following yesterday's programme, inspired by some amazing stories we heard about people living with Crohn's disease and colitis and living with a stoma bag as well, because many of you saying it's not something that feel easy. It's easily talked about, or that people will talk about enough, or that you might encounter a stigma as well. So we made it very clear that all items are up for discussion here on Liveline. It's 51551 for your text. Mick, thanks for getting in touch. How are you?
Yeah, grand, John, yourself?
Very well, thank you very much. You were inspired by what you heard yesterday because it was something you can relate to.
Yeah, I've been living with both a colonoscopy and an ileanoscopy for the last 4 years there, you know. Now, when you have those operations, a colonoscopy is not so bad because after a while, it actually brings you back nearly to normality. But when you go the other side to an ileanoscopy, it's so active, you're looking for a bathroom or toilet, maybe anything up between 8 and 10 times a day. So you really have to plan your day, where you're going, what you're going to do. And I applied a while ago for a disabled sticker for the car, hoping that would ease the pressure when you're out, like you okay. put into a Tesco or a Lidl or anywhere.
So, yeah, Mick, just explain to our listeners, because you, while you're on the road, you're going to need to find a public toilet. You're going to need to go somewhere convenient more often than most. It can be difficult to find that.
Yeah, and like if you do pull into a place and the car park is full, so where do you go? So you're driving around and then you could be the far end of the car park, and these things don't hang around, John. When this thing feels, it feels, and it'll be like an explosion after a while, you know?
Okay.
So it's a bit daunting at times, but look, after a while you do get used to it because it is what it is, but you are deemed disabled when you have a stoma, yet you can't apply for a disabled sticker. Because the regulations for them, the criteria for that is applicants, I have it here in front of me, applicant with a permanent condition or disability that severely restricts their ability to walk. Only those applicants with the ability to walk up to 50 metres unaided without stopping can get this sticker.
Okay.
So, you know, like the likes of people like myself, and there's lots more of us out there, there's no cost to this.
Okay, let's go back to just a minute, Mick, because I want to understand this completely. I didn't know what you just told me there, that when you have this bag, you said you're classified as having a disability. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yes. Yeah, yeah. And so I'm told anyway. But
in what way? As you found out,
you can get allowances. You can get medical allowances and things like that on it, disability allowances.
Okay, whereas
you can't get this,
you are trying to get out there, living your daily life. You're looking for toilets more often than many and struggling to find a convenience or to get parked next to one in a hurry. You don't qualify for what you had hoped for.
No, so if you go to the city centre, where do you go? As I say, this thing, it doesn't, the difference between an ileanoscopy bag and a colonoscopy bag on the stoma end of things is if you have a colonoscopy, that goes through the large bowel. Your large bowel is kind of still there. So your food that goes in, you know, it's there for a couple of hours, 4 or 5 hours. It's able to digest. When you don't have that, when you have an ileanoscopy, it goes straight through you. Mm-hmm. And it comes out kind of in the liquid form. Mm-hmm. So say that could happen as opposed to the colonoscopy. I have a colonoscopy and an ileanoscopy.
Yeah, yeah.
The way and it worked out.
So
at
you
the
want,
time, you know?
You need to get to a public bathroom, toilet.
Yeah, yeah,
you need
yeah.
to get there in a hurry. You need to get there often. And you might find that when you finally found one somewhere on the road, you can't get parked anywhere near it.
Exactly.
So you were hoping you'd get a blue badge, basically.
Yeah, but I'll have to go out and chop one of my legs off to get one of those. You
don't
know?
Do anything rash, Mick, yet. What was the process, so? Who did you ask for that? Did you ask your doctor for advice
on it? My doctor filled the form out that I sent off, and he specified that, like, you know, I would need to use the bathroom so many times a day, but he said, no, it has to be something to do with your being not able to walk and stuff like that, you know? But then again, John, if you look and you go into some of the shopping places there and you see guys parked up in disabled places. Now, do you have the sticker? But when you get out of the car, geez, they could play football for Ireland tonight, you know?
Well, we know there are all sorts of...
It might be a little bit better, actually, than someone, but you know
I
what I mean?
I suppose we let's not go slagging off the footballers ahead of the big match in Portugal. Let's wish them luck for now. But 51551, if listeners want to get in touch. What I was going to say, Mick, was... We know there are all sorts of disabilities and hidden disabilities sometimes. So if you have a blue badge, there are certain criteria to qualify for that. You don't qualify for it. Well, the badges are issued by the Disabled Drivers Association of Ireland in conjunction with the Irish Wheelchair Association. And I know this from experience, actually, my family, but it's on behalf of the Department of Transport. Did you contact them or what did they say?
No, I rang them. I rang the Disabled Drivers Association after when I received the letter of refusal. The letter is here. We regret we are unable to grant you a permit, you know?
Right.
And I asked a question. I said, when is disablement not a disablement? When are you? You know what I mean? Like, there's more than just having a broken leg or a crooked leg or something to a disabled. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't see everyone disabled. We can't see it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, is what I'm saying is there's so many spaces there. If you go into the big shopping malls, they're not being used. There's no expense for this. It's only a matter of sending a person out a sticker. And how often are they going to use it? So they're not putting anybody out, or they're not taking anybody's places or anything. So, mm-hmm. You know,
I'm just looking up the Disabled Drivers Association website, and disabled or disability, it says, are terms which are used in the context of a wide range of situations within the various schemes of the state. Their definition can be different depending on the context of state scheme involved. For the purpose of the EU Disabled Persons Parking Permit Scheme, a disabled person means a person with a permanent condition or disability that severely restricts their ability to walk. Those registered blind are considered to have their ability to walk severely restricted also. So it doesn't meet your condition, it would seem,
no.
Mick.
No.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm not put out about it by any way, but I think it'd be such a simple thing to do to facilitate people in my position. You know, they don't have to change anything. They don't have to do anything. All they do is send you a little sticker that you might use 3 times a day for 10 minutes. You might not. Some people don't, you know.
It'd make life a bit easier, Mick.
It's a very simple procedure, yeah.
It'd make your life a little bit easier, or maybe less. Take away some of the worry or the fear, because it must be always in your mind. You have to know where there's going to be a toilet to use, or a good public convenience to stop at.
Well, if Google wants to get in touch with me, I could tell them where every toilet is on the road all around the country at the moment.
Really? You have to plan your days like that, do you?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, like, I'm on the road a good bit, you know. Like, this week, one day I was in New Ross, next day Limerick, next day was Galway. So I'd have to Google in where's the Apples, where's the Circle K's.
Where's all the service stations, basically, where there might be good toilets and somewhere you can, you know, have a rest and comfort and...
Yeah.
And get to where you need to be. I take your point, Mick.
It's a kind of, you're battling, you see, when you have an ostomy, because it comes out in liquid form, you're dehydrating yourself all the time. So you have to bring your water and all, which in the car all the time. So you have to rehydrate yourself all the time. So then when you rehydrate yourself, the bag starts to fill again. So it's a kind of a vicious circle.
Okay.
So you have to keep going at it, you know? But look, come here, at the end of the day, there's a lot of people worse off than I am.
I'm sure that's always the way, Mick. But you've been through the mill as well, I think, yourself over the years. I'm glad to hear you're doing well with the bag as well. But life could be made simpler, is what you're saying.
Maybe if you had a little bit of
help just to find that parking spot, or to use one that's conveniently located. I don't know. It's something we will look into, whether you maybe whether the disabled driver scheme, whether the blue badges can be extended. I'd love to hear other listeners' views on it as well. It's 51551 and liveline at rte.ie as well. Mick, are you confident? So you're not confident ahead of the match, is it, at the weekend?
I don't think so. I think we're a lost cause, are we?
Hopefully not, but it's tough opposition.
There could be an opening there now. There could be an opening there now for Jim Gavin. Jim might take over there now.
Suggestions. We'll take any suggestions going, I think, at this stage for our soccer team. But Mick, thanks very much for that.
It's
087-484-8888. Maureen, hi. How are you?
Hi. Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thanks. And Maureen, tell me about your situation. You've been inspired by some of the other stories.
I can totally empathise with Mick there, because I applied for that badge as well, and because I didn't have any crutches or sticks or wheelchair, I wasn't eligible. And I've had my colostomy bag for 14 years now. And it was due to bowel cancer. And I was just telling your colleague there earlier, the scary thing about all of this is that because we don't talk about it, it's hidden under the carpet and no one knows what they're actually heading for. So when I was told I was going to have a colostomy bag, I was so scared, John. I didn't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anyone who had one. Also, when I had my bowel cancer, I had practically no symptoms. I had no pain. I had slight flatulence, which my doctor thought was from eating broccoli, and I had just slight bleeding. And within a week, I was diagnosed with a size 3-4 tumour.
Mm-hmm. That must have been very frightening at the time. You mentioned something very important, though, there, Maureen. They might have seemed like small signs or
totally,
simple sort of symptoms, but you contacted your doctor.
immediately. And I would say that to people, anything they notice that's totally different from the norm, contact your doctor, even though it might seem silly at the time, but it's really, it saved my life.
Mm-hmm. There should be no silly questions for the doctor, I
early
think.
Early detection, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, but as I said, I'm so happy that this subject is on air because so many people don't know about stomas. They're not educated. They're not educated in relation to radiation. Chemotherapy, again, they were, I have always heard those names, but I never knew what it entailed. And that was, it's scary enough being told you have cancer without being going into the total abyss mm-hmm. in an unknown fashion and not knowing what you're up against.
Maureen, you've really been through a lot. But after the stoma bag then, something you were very frightened of, something you were very worried about, tell me how it felt afterwards and how you feel now.
At the beginning, I was so scared. I didn't ask the doctor, was I going to die? I just asked him, was I going to have a bag? And he said, yes. And he said, for 6 months. And I said, for 6 weeks. And he said, no, 6 months. But I promise I will be able to reverse it. Now, with all due respect, they couldn't reverse it because my cancer had been very low down in my rectum. So I would have been left with incontinence and I wouldn't have lived with incontinence. Mm-hmm. So it was my decision to actually keep it. But in all honesty, I would not. If I was told in the morning I could have it reversed, can I say, hand on my heart, I would not have it reversed. It's my best friend. And I have named it. I won't tell you the name. But as my daughter said to me, Mom, we can't keep going around asking how your bag is, you know.
So you gave it a name.
I gave it a name and it's my friend. And she does say to me now, well, how is, you know, and she names it. So it's my friend. But even though I can associate with John there because I, or with Mick, because I also had, I went through a twisted bowel in January and that was far worse than ever the cancer was. And I had, my bag is now more an ileostomy than a colostomy.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as that it's very liquidy all the time. So I'm now in that position where I constantly have to balance my intake of fluid and okay. my output to try and keep it, you know, and so that I don't become dehydrated.
And maybe you would, well, you agree with Mick, you would like or you could benefit from a badge to park closer to public conveniences
totally.
Or
it's
rest
funny,
stops
some,
as well.
In some cases I've had panic situations where mm-hmm. I'm trying to find a park and I have to go to the bathroom and there aren't any parking facilities. I did apply, but because I didn't have a broken leg or I wasn't on a crutch, I wasn't eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this day and age, that should be certainly updated to suit. As John's, as Mick said, it was, if we have a disability, then it should come under that section.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one, all right. 51551, if other listeners want to get in touch on it as well. We were talking about weddings as well and dating on the programme as well, Maureen. Were you at a wedding recently?
I was. My daughter got married in Seville on the 5th of September. And can I tell you, John, I danced for 5 hours on the floor and I had a great time.
Good for you.
I had a great time. And no one knew, apart from my family, my close friends would have known that I had a colostomy bag. There is nothing you can't do. As that lady yesterday, she really inspired me because I know she was swimming and she was jogging and she was climbing. I don't do any of that. But I ran a business and I only retired last year. I ran a hair and beauty salon and you know, I only retired last year and I'm still running around. It doesn't stop me doing anything.
Uh-huh. Good for you. Well, that's some endurance test as well, 5 hours on the dance floor in Spain.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it was brilliant. Uh-huh. So I'm so happy you've brought up this subject because it's very important uh-huh. that people become aware.
Yeah, it was Terry that got the conversation going yesterday. She's doing an endurance race this weekend as well. But you were dancing the
she
night away.
Indeed.
Congratulations to your daughter, by the way. Can I ask you, Maureen,
something
that I think we were talking women's fashion yesterday as well, it came up. But I'm wondering, when you talk about, you know, being mother of the bride and going to Spain for this big event, is it something you always have to think about what you're going to wear, or are you trying to hide the bag or wear, choose your outfit around it or what?
Not really. I'm still in all the clothes I would have worn prior to that. And I like quite tight fitting clothes, I might say as well. I don't wear tents or anything. So I decided I would go for a skirt and a top as opposed to a dress. More so because I'm comfortable. Now, when I actually got my skirt made and the dressmaker said to me, well, we'll just put a few little ruffles. But to be honest, you would never have noticed that it was tight and no one noticed that I had a colostomy bag.
Mm-hmm. Maureen, I'd say you looked amazing, you know, so and felt even better, it sounds like.
You can wear anything you want. It's all about your attitude. You just have to have, you know, I could sit at home and feel sorry for myself, but what's the point? I love it and I would not change it.
Good for you, Maureen. 51551. Regina, hello.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for getting in touch as well. Tell us your story, please.
So, John, can I first say, before I say anything, I would like to say when I was diagnosed at 18 years of age, I have been in the public health care system all my life dealing with Crohn's disease. I was very lucky with my GP in Mount Mellick, Dr. Aidan Hansen, who provisionally diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And then my gastroenterologist in the Mater Hospital was a man by the name of Dr. J.R. Lennon.
Okay.
He was an absolute genius. And my surgeon, who is Professor Ronan O'Connell, was an absolute genius.
You're getting them all in, Regina. You're getting them all in here, Regina. You'll have to take them out.
Without them, John, if I could just say, I was so sick that without those men, I would not be alive today.
Well, I'm delighted that you're alive today and doing well. And you're right, there are amazing people in our health services and they've helped you along the way. So how's life for you with a stoma bag now?
Yes. So I was diagnosed at 18. I was to do my Leaving Cert. They wanted me to go into hospital immediately. I said, no, I must get the Leaving Cert out of the way. So the day after I completed the Leaving Cert, I went into hospital the next day. So from there then, I suffered with Crohn's disease for many years. I had long bouts in hospital. I had bouts of 8 weeks, 3 months at a time. I was in very poor health. I was in extreme pain. Now, when I say pain, I mean pain 24 hours a day. I mean, there's no relief from the pain. No matter what you take, you can't take away the pain. You can't sleep. You nap for 10 minutes. The pain wakes you up. And because you're so run down, you're in so much pain, your life is very limited in what you can do. So I was very lucky. I was in the civil service.
Okay, and we're learning that from so many people. Sorry, Regina, that we have spoken to it, because there's so many people who want to get in touch and this, and I really want them to be able to. How did life change for you after the stoma bag?
Yes, so in 2003 then, because the intestine was so bad, I had to have an ileostomy and I was down to 6 stone and I was in poor health. So it was a matter of life and death. If I didn't go forward with the surgery, there was nothing else they could do for me. So obviously it was a no-brainer. So I was extremely lucky. It's an 8-hour surgery. It's a really long surgery. It's a serious surgery. So I married with a little daughter of 11 years of age at the time. Mm-hmm. I go ahead and I have my surgery done. And I have to say it was the best thing that ever happened in my circumstances with the Crohn's. It changed my life completely. Firstly, the pain was gone. No more pain. Now, I will say with an ileostomy, you have your bowel is like sweating fluid. You know, it has liquid comes from your bowel walls. So your ileostomy bag is constantly filling. Mm-hmm. So it's not diarrhea. It's a liquid from the bowel.
Yeah, and we're hearing that from lots of listeners today. This is still something you'll have to live with and it's inconvenient and it's difficult.
But you
mentioned something amazing there,
no
that life
control.
Is without pain now.
Oh, life is without pain and life is fantastic. And I mean, obviously, I would have been very depressed and very down. And I had a fantastic husband. I still have.
Good.
And a fantastic daughter. And I mean, life was limited for them because obviously when I was in a lot of pain, I would have been in very bad form, bad humour, depressed, down, not a normal wife or a normal mother. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of things I couldn't do with my daughter. Since I had that surgery, it just changed my life like a miracle. I cannot explain how fantastic it was.
What would you say, Regina?
Regina,
what would you say to anyone out there who's afraid or going through those symptoms you described now or being told they're going to need this procedure, they're going to need a stoma bag? What would you say?
I would say it's a pity that the healthcare system doesn't use people like me that can talk to people like that and can show them the bag, show them my body, show them the bag, show them how it works, give them my experience of not to be afraid, go forward, your life will only improve for the better.
That is great to hear, Regina, and thank you for telling that to our listeners today as well. What did you think of Mick's call for the blue badge there, that he should have access to disabled parking spaces because he needs to access the toilet more often?
Well, I agree, because when I go out, first thing I find is not the fire exit, it's the toilet, even still. So because I have no control over the output into the bag and the air that goes in, it has a small filter, but it fills up like a balloon with the air, and then it starts to pull away from your skin, the base plate, and then it begins to leak. So one must get to a toilet. So I use a disabled toilet all the time. Mm-hmm. People see me walking in full body enabled and going, what's she doing going into a disabled toilet? So I'd love to have a badge or a permission to go into a disabled toilet and use it, and people not to think that I'm just taking their facilities away from them. I definitely think that it should be recognised and given status, because you've no choice. You have to go in and you have to stand and you have to use a sink and you have to do many things with your bag. And you can't do that in a normal cubicle because it's not big enough.
Okay.
You end up kneeling on the floor trying to empty your bag into a toilet.
Okay.
And that's just not good enough.
So you could do with some allowances, including being able to park a bit closer to the toilet. We're hearing you. Lots of people saying that. 51551. Regina, thank you so much for talking to us, and
thank you,
best to your family as well, and to living life without pain and getting to do the things that you wanted to do too. liveline@rte.ie.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
And 51551 for your texts, or liveline@rte.ie for emails. Fran got in touch with us. Good afternoon, Fran.
Oh, good afternoon, John. It's nice to speak to you.
And to you as well. What happened in rush hour last evening?
In rush hour, going through Chapel, is it? All of a sudden, my car broke down. And the clutch was gone, so I couldn't put it into gear. And people started honking their horns, and
I can imagine the stress of it, Fran. Were you panicking?
Yeah, I was, yeah, and I'd had a terrible day. So all of a sudden, people realized probably that there was nothing I could do, and they came over and helped me. A man, I don't know how he did it, but managed to get enough the clutch working so that two other people from two different cars came over and pushed the car onto a safe place. So that was one thing. And then I sat in the car, and I'd call the rescue service, and I was waiting for them. And then I got out of the car to stretch my legs. And gradually, people came out of their houses in Chapel Izzet to offer me help, to ask if I was okay, to ask if I needed anything. And they all started by saying, would you like a cup of tea?
Wow.
That was the first thing they asked.
So,
you know?
So Fran, you're stuck in traffic in Chapel Izzet, rush hour. The car has stalled. You can't get it into gear. I can hear the honking. I can just hear it. And I'm like, go easy, lads, go easy. You don't know what I'm going through here. But all of a sudden, there was sort of a shift in gear in terms of the mood locally. Everybody came to your aid.
It was wonderful. And a young couple came over to me, you know, Cahill and Breed, and they invited me into their home and introduced me to their family. And then a lovely woman said, ring the doorbell if there's anything you need. So I just wanted to say that, you know, obviously I'm foreign, and I've been here since 1997, but it's a pleasure being here. It really is wonderful. And in this day of wars and conflict and everything, it's just a feeling of hope that I have, that there's still a country like Ireland where people are not afraid to offer help and support, and just to a total stranger. And I hope the Irish people appreciate, you know, what they have and what they are, especially. That's all. Thank you for listening to me.
Thanks for getting in touch with us on Liveline as well. I'd listen to your lovely accent, Fran, for longer as well. Where did you move from when you moved to Ireland?
I was originally French, but I've lived in a lot of places in the world, and I learned English in the States when I was very young. So that never goes.
Now, when I mentioned the rush hour and how you can get different reactions and some honking to all of a sudden people bringing you into their homes and their lives and being so kind to you as well, do you think things have changed in your time in Ireland in the last, nearly 30 years or so? Or I suppose it's refreshing to see there is still that friendship out there and those random acts of kindness.
No, I think the people are the same. And just to the people who did come to my rescue, they were different ages, different nationalities, all sorts of people, different genders, and just everyone was there. And I still see it when people say hello to you on the street. They say hello to you in the queue. And being French, we don't do that in France.
Okay, know? Well, it's good people to hear they're still doing it in Ireland and that we're still known for our friendliness. Well said, Fran, and thank you so much as well. And good luck with the car, whatever else happens. But I'm glad that some random act of kindness made your day as well. 51551 or Liveline at RTE if
thank
other
you,
listeners
John.
Want to get in touch. Thank you, Fran. Marie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm very well. What happened to your son yesterday, was it?
Tuesday. It was Tuesday morning, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, tell me.
So he was cycling to college and his back wheel just got caught on the tram line and the wheel actually came off and he
Where
fell
was
off
this?
His bike and just on Dawson Street. And he fell off his bike and a very kind gentleman stopped to help him and actually managed to put his wheel back on. And I just want to say thanks to him. And there was another lovely lady, Nessa, I got her name. She called me on her own phone. She had got my number from my son and he was in a bit of shock. So she called and just said what had happened. And she got him a cup of tea and a croissant. And she stayed with him for a long time to make sure that he was all right. Because as I said, you would get a shock. And the gentleman, I'm sure, you know, when you change a tire on a bike and put back on a wheel, you know, your hands are going to be dirty and it's not the cleanest of things to do on your way to work or college or wherever that man was going. And I didn't get his name, but Nessa was the other lady's name that he told me about. So again, just like that lady had said, you know, there's so many kind, good-hearted people out there, and I think that we've lost sight of that. Maybe with the, you know, there's so much aggression online, I feel now, and so much anger that I don't think that's us. And it's just lovely to see that people took time out of their, and at 25 to 9 in Dublin City Centre, I'm sure at that time everybody was rushing to work and to college and to get wherever they needed to be, but they stopped, and it just, you know, restores my faith in the goodness of people. And there's so many other people helping people out there quietly every day, and they just, I think it's important that kindness is acknowledged, because, you know, when your children are away, you hope that they're safe and that they're minded, you know. So it was lovely. I got a fright, but it was lovely to hear that he was fine and that people stayed with him until he was able to.
Oh, that's good. How old is your son, Marie?
He's 19.
Okay, and in college, obviously. But as you said, away from home, you're always worried about him. Was he hurt? Is he okay after the incident?
Yeah, he was fine. Just had he hurt his hand and his side a little bit where he just came off straight. But he was fine. I think it's just a shock. And then I suppose when that happens and there's nobody around, you just don't know what to do, I suppose. And straight away, they came over. And that lady, Nessa, I called her back and she texted me twice after that. And I just, she went, both of them actually went above and beyond for a stranger as well, you know. And it's just lovely. And I think that probably happens all the time. But I think it's important. And, you know, if we could have some sort of kindness of strangers slot on your show every week or month, just to remind people of who we are. And we've always been like that. And, you know, it's such a great strength that we
have.
Right, and
though,
I think
Marie.
It's just lovely to see it with all the negativity that's out there at the minute. It's lovely to see it in action. And I'd just like to say just a really huge thanks to those people.
Marie, thank you so much. You're right. Let's celebrate the unsung heroes. And to
thank
Fran
you.
As well. Liveline at RTE.ie if you want to share your stories.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815. Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
Today's programme was produced by Brenda Donoghue, Niall McMonagall was on sound, and Laura Lee Davies is our broadcast coordinator. Thanks to you all for getting in touch and for listening, of course. Have a lovely weekend. If you're going sober dating or doing anything else at all, let me know how you got on for Monday's show, liveline at rte.ie. Have a lovely weekend. Shea Byrne is up next.